this is a prayer spoken by Queen Kunti to Lord Krishna. And she addresses Lord Krishna by the name Madhu. Madhu means honey, sweet as honey. God is sweet as honey. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea, without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you, without being diverted to anyone else. The purport. Perfection of pure devotional service is attained when all attention is diverted towards the transcendental loving service of the Lord. To cut off the tie of all other affections does not mean complete negation of the finer elements like affection for someone else. This is not possible. A living being, whoever he may be, must have this feeling of affection for others, because this is a symptom of life. The symptoms of life, such as desire, anger, hankerings, feelings of attraction, etc., cannot be annihilated. Only the object has to be changed. Desire cannot be negated, but in devotional service the desire is changed only for the service of the Lord in place of desire for sense gratification. The so-called affection, yes, for family, society, country, etc., consists of different phases of sense gratification. When this desire is changed for the satisfaction of the Lord, it is called devotional service. In the Bhagavad Gita, we can see that Arjuna desired not to fight with his brothers and relations, just to satisfy his own personal desires. But when he heard the message of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, he changed his decision and served the Lord. And for his doing so, he became a famous devotee of the Lord. For it is declared in all the scriptures that Arjuna attained spiritual perfection by devotional service to the Lord in friendship. The fighting was there, the friendship was there, Arjuna was there, and Krishna was there. But Arjuna became a different person by devotional service. Therefore, the prayers of Kunti also indicate the same categorical changes in activities. Srimati Kunti wanted to serve the Lord without diversion, and that was her prayer. This unalloyed devotion is the ultimate goal of life. Our attention is usually diverted to the service of something which is non-godly or not in the program of the Lord. When the program is changed into the service of the Lord, that is to say, when the senses are purified in relation with the service of the Lord, it is called pure unalloyed devotional service. Srimati Kunti Devi wanted that perfection and prayed for it from the Lord. Her affection for the Pandavas and the Vrishnis is not out of the range of devotional service, because the service of the Lord and the service of the devotees are identical. Sometimes service to the devotee is more valuable than service to the Lord. But here, the affection of Kunti Devi for the Pandavas and the Vrishnis was due to family relation. This tie of affection in terms of material relation is the relation of Maya, because the relations of the body or the mind are due to the influence of the external energy. Relations of the soul established in relation with the Supreme Soul are factual relations. When Kunti Devi wanted to cut off the family relation, she meant to cut off the relation of the skin. This skin relation is the cause of material bondage, but the relation of the soul is the cause of freedom. This relation of the soul to the soul can be established by the via medium of the relation with the super soul. That comes a very interesting declaration, if you wish, or an interesting motto. Seeing in the darkness is not seeing, but seeing by the light of the sun means to see the sun and everything else which was unseen in the darkness. That is the way of devotional service. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. Srila Prabhupada explains this exclusivity of directing the feeling of attraction only to Krishna with a nice analogy. He says, in effect, that if you want to have a good human relationship with someone, you must have three people in the relationship, or three persons. In human love affair, this is the most disturbing thing that you can imagine. If there is a man and a woman trying to develop a firm, committed relationship, and then there is a third lover somewhere in the air, then this is very disturbing. It is especially when it comes out. So in spiritual relationships, we hear there need to be three people. You and the person you love, and then the third, God. And a reason is given why this third person needs to be there. With the presence of God in a relationship, you will be able to see the other person in his or her true light. Without God being in a relationship, you will not be able to see the other person in his or her true light. Therefore, Krishna is often compared to Surya. Krishna Surya Sama. Sama means exactly as. Krishna is exactly as the sun who gives light and dispels the darkness. Material life materialistic life is a life where the Krishna sun or God sun is not present. There only my interest is supreme, and the other person's interest is on second place. But when Krishna is in the center of a relationship, you cannot maintain the materialistic selfishness any longer. When God is there, selfishness has to go, and therefore you are able in an unselfish way to really see the other person for the first time, maybe. So the Krishna sun is important in a relationship, just like the sun is important if you want to see each other. So sometimes we make a walk near the Elbe and we talk with someone, it becomes dark, we can't see that person just the same way. When it becomes dark in our lives and Krishna is no longer present, we can't see ourselves and not even the other person. Hare Krishna. This is the analogy. So now, after having established that it is good if the affection goes to Krishna, a very, very important point is made, which I find is an, let me say, an entry door, eine Eingangstür, if you so want, into our subject today. Our subject today is emotions and spiritual life. Hare Krishna. Queen Kunti here prays, let my attraction be constantly drawn to you without being diverted to anyone else. Now, if you understand this without any further explanation, you might commit a great mistake and a great problem in your spiritual life. That is, you only direct your attention to Krishna without anyone else, and you become an impossible person to deal with. you become so all other emotions like affection for others, what is here, finer sentiments, even anger and hankering and so on, becomes killed at the root. What's a behandlung? And you become what is called an emotionally atrophied person, also ein emotional verkümmerter Mensch. You only think of one thing, Krishna. Okay, someone asks you to do you a favor, to do him or her a favor, and you say, are you Krishna or not? Someone comes to you maybe and tells you that your language is sometimes a little hurting. You say, I'm only interested in Krishna, I'm not interested in anyone else or anything else. Someone might tell you, wouldn't it be good to have an ecological, valuable life, you know. And you think, no, I am a transcendentalist. I don't care if I use stereopore or a clay pot. It is not of interest. You become, in the name of exclusivity, also Ausschließlichkeit, you become a person who is in this world almost a dead person, and as a result you might develop impersonal relationships to other people. So in his purport, Srila Prabhupada wishes to make clear that this is not that the purpose of Krishna consciousness. He says, to cut off the tie of all other affections does not mean complete negation of the finer elements like affection for someone else. It's all right, in other words, to have appreciation and affection for someone else. But as he has made clear later, it's good if Krishna is also there in this affectionate relationship, so that you can see the other person in his or her true light. Once, I remember at an early stage of our movement, Srila Prabhupada received a letter from two nice Christian ladies in San Francisco. These ladies had met a Sangatan devotee who was very harsh. He said all other things, all other religions and Krishna consciousness are Maya. Maya means illusion. When he was dealing with the two people who were interested in spiritual life, he said, "I don't have time to talk with you. Buy the book or go." So these two Christian ladies were shocked. Is this a spiritual person? And wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada saying, we met one of your boys. He seems to be from a good background, but he was so harsh. Isn't love important to you? Love for others and so on. Love your neighbor and all this. Is this not important? And Srila Prabhupada wrote back like a concerned father who feels it's necessary to explain the dealings of his immature son. He wanted to give an explanation. Of course, he agreed. Yes, Prabhupada had said so often, if you make spiritual advancement, you begin to, first of all, see other living beings with an equal eye. You don't make a distinction between a high and a low, between a learned brahmana, a cow, a dog, and a dog eater. Even the dog eater, who is really quite intense people. He's like the super gypsy of Europe, the dog eater. Is seen from the spiritual perspective with an equal eye. It's a soul like me and you. And later, if you have actually matured further in spiritual life, then you add to this equal vision a vision of compassion. You look, is there someone who is suffering, and you don't like if someone is suffering. You want to really help and elevate that person. That's a very important principle. It's called jiva daya, compassion to other living beings. For this, you first have to come to the samadarshina level, the level where you see people equally without distinguishing. He's high, he's low, he's good, he's bad. But then you can advance further and get into a compassionate mood. So obviously that is the standard of Krishna consciousness. But Prabhupada didn't talk in his answer letter to these two Christian ladies who had made a negative, negative encounter with a book distributor of our movement. He didn't point out these philosophical point. He wanted to explain why these two young boys were like this. And he gave a very interesting explanation, which I really want to request you to consider and understand deeply. He said, when someone turns away from the world of Maya, the world of illusion, the first and almost natural development in his psychology is something like a negative attitude to the world. He is careful. He doesn't want to be entangled once more. It's almost like a drunkard who was addicted to drinking alcohol. And whenever there is alcohol, he reacts very violently. Oh. And he runs away, you know, like this. He is really he is really intense, you know, even more than it is necessary. He may come by some people drinking some glass of beer, and he goes and he takes the table and he goes just so, because he has a problem with alcohol. He was so addicted to alcohol that every day he was drinking unhealthy amounts of alcohol, and now he feels like fighting his old addiction. Because, now listen to this, he is still a little attached. He's not fighting with what is going on outside. He's so intense and so aggressive because it's still inside of him. And he wants to get rid of it, like someone who wants to get rid of glue. You know, and therefore he is such an unpleasant character, so to say. Prabhupada was explaining this in the Bhagavad Gita. A neophyte spiritualist, also ein spiritueller Mensch im Anfängerstadium, is generally advised to keep aloof from the objects of the senses, also sich so ein bisschen dem fernzuhalten, den Sinnesobjekten. But aside from that, one has to strengthen the mind by the use of intelligence. What this means is, yes, in the beginning, you are a little bit super careful to not come close to the objects of the senses. In other words, the previous drunkard who is still in the danger zone is advised, don't take a job which has to do with alcohol. You will again go wild on alcohol. Don't go near a Gastwirtschaft. What is it in English? A Gostilna. No, that's Croatian. A bar or a pub. Don't go near to it, because you might again be, or someone who was a gambler and who always spent all his money in the casinos, you know, you would say, don't even go near to Luxembourg, the town of the big casino. It is dangerous for you. You might again become a victim to your old addictions, you know. But later, at a later stage, it should be all right to go to Luxembourg, you know. At a later stage, he should have a strong mind, so that he deals with the addictions in a mature way, in a nice way. This is what this particular effect says. So let us summarize, zusammenfassen. A person who starts his spiritual life and who wants to make a distance between himself and the material energy is often doing this with an emotional intensity which is for others quite amazing or astonishing, and that seems to be natural. That seems to be a natural reaction. However, as he advances further, he should be more strong in his mind, and in this way he doesn't need to be so strong in his external expression of negation. Sometimes those who have observed spiritual movements, not only ours but others, have noted that the members are emotionally not so secure. They have not such deep relationships. They They seem to be afraid of emotions, almost. And they tend to be even a little impersonalistic. I remember in the old days when I used to say to someone, good morning. The management, what? Good morning? Good morning. I just meant it so affectionately or so normally. Yes, we have risen and sometimes it's not easy. We are a little tired in the morning, so we wish you a good morning. May your morning be energetic and fulfilling and so on. But I remember in the old days we looked at each other. Are you a liar? Are you an illusion? You know, good morning. Why is there a need to wish someone a good morning if we are spiritual souls? I was so convinced that I'm not the body and not the mind in the old days, you know, that it was almost close to fanaticism. In the winter, I remember, for short walks, which I had to do, I didn't think it's necessary to dress in shoes. Why not? I'm spiritual. I have nothing to do with the body. Now I have a lot to do with the body because of it. I have a vein problem. You know, it comes from that time. So totally ignoring and negating anything like finer sentiments or even the body is actually a wrong understanding of spiritual philosophy. But it can happen. It can happen. It can happen. Another reason why it is maybe possible that you can become emotionally a little bit atrophied. Wie sagt man? Verkümmert. Verkümmert ist das deutsche Wort. Atrophied. You know, atrophied means when you have atrophy. I really don't know the German word for this. If you have a cast, as in gips, and your arm is for one whole month like this, then when the cast is removed, your arm is called atrophied. Because of not being used, you can't... Has any one of you made the experience? You can't really move it. So when you don't use emotions because you just negate your whole existence, then your emotions at one stage will become unusable or atrophied, verkümmert. Another reason why this can happen is because a person who takes to spiritual life, especially to the spiritual life of Krishna consciousness, throws his old culture overboard. You know, no sex, no drugs, no rock and roll for some of you, but for others, no Chopin, no Mozart, no Beethoven, and what else we throw overboard? Movies. Don't move us anymore. Cloth, nice dresses, no saris and dhotis, chada, and so on. And what else is a part of culture? Literature. No Hermann Hesse. Hermann is in Maya. but this does something to for a human being. See, in culture, the finer sentiments and emotions are there. You know, like that's why. Sometimes you ask yourself, why is this loud rock and roll music so attractive to people? Well, it is a catharsis. It releases emotions, isn't it? Like our remember Jagannath? How he was a hardcore Jagannath, I believe. And he, at one stage, he said, I can't tolerate it any longer. I have to do some solid screaming. Some screaming music. What is it? Hardcore music?
Yeah.
Heavy metal. Heavy metal, yes, heavy metal. It was necessary because he. This is an emotional music, or Beethoven. It's also highly. I remember when we went to the Ayurvedic center, one of us started to take the piano and played some Mendelssohn. Mendelssohn. Es war so schrecklich romantisch. you know, also like highly emotional music, or Chopinsky. Your culture is emotional. Now, if you all say my old life is totally illusory, I will start a new life. I'm with my initiation. I'm newborn into a new life. It can create some problems because all of a sudden you enter into a vacuum, a cultural vacuum. Isn't it? It is. I remember we had one brahmachari in the old Heidelberg temple. From time to time, he just had to go to the piano, and he played like anything. Lila Shukha. It really sounded like an alcoholic going back to his bottle, you know, and drinking. He needed emotions. So another reason why. The first reason why you can become emotionally atrophied in spiritual life is a wrong understanding of the philosophy. The second is because you have just given up your old culture. And the next reason, which I think is very important, is because you deal differently with the man-woman duality. You know, in material life, people know about how to deal with man-woman duality. They just become attached to each other and have relationships of varying intensities. But in spiritual life, there's all of a sudden a state of life called monkhood. Monkhood, Mönchtum, where there is a very distinct need to define your relationship to woman or to man, if you are a woman, in a different way. And it's not so easy to find a new definition, even when we are marrying, like most of our devotees are married couples. Also, a new definition of relationships seems to be appropriate because it's not done like in material life, where you just think as attached as possible, as much attached as possible, is very good. You feel in spiritual life, I want to give my heart to Krishna, and then there is another person, yes, I want to give some of my heart to the other person also, but not all. And it becomes a new dimension, a new thing, a new subject matter. And as a result, sometimes strange things can happen. I remember in Christian monastery, there was a slogan, Brüder, senkt die Blicke nieder. Um die Ecke kommt ein Mieder. Mieder means what the women used to dress. You know, they had some arrangement in the cloth to dress, which only women would use, not men. This was a Mieder. I don't exactly know how it looks, but in English, in easy English, brothers, put your glances to the floor. There, from somewhere around the corner, a woman approaches. You know, this is not a very valuable, this is not a very mature reaction. I can't go like this through the world all the time. You know, even if I'm a monk, it is not good. You will fall and you will bang against many things. So in spiritual life there we have to redefine our use of emotions to not come into the situation which is called atrophied emotions. So now I want to see what is the time. Yes, now I will have to make it a little shorter than my notes. Now it is natural that different people have different emotional bodies. I think as you are living in the community of the Vedna Academy, you have noted there are some who have some ways of emotions. There are some of us who are very, very emotional. There are some who have difficulties with their emotions because the emotions are maybe even too strong for them to handle them. The emotions of affection and rejection. I don't want to see you any longer. I make a distance to you. You know, this is... Rupa Goswami says that there are three different types of hearts. He says, there's one type of heart which is like a thunderbolt. Bang! Very hot! A thunderbolt. Then there is a heart which is like gold. A gold is a little bit softer when it gets hot then the gold can melt. The thunderbolt does never melt. It's strong like electricity. But then there's a heart which is like wax, huh? And such hearts are melting very easy. And I have noted that devotees who are joining the who are in the movement, after some time get soft hearts. I was today looking at our Nityananda Pran. Nityananda Pran saw a little insect on the floor. It was not a little insect, it was a bigger insect, a Schuster, we say in German language. And he very lovingly was thinking of the insect, you know, that no one jumps on the insects or tramples on the insects. So he lovingly took a piece of paper with his hand, and he then made arrangements to take the insect out of the window. You remember that little scene? That's a natural sign of a devotee. He becomes a little soft-hearted, a normal person. He said, ah! You know, maybe that's a very, very hard-hearted person, which I just imitated. Yes, a devotee, Prabhupada says, doesn't want to harm even a little ant. A little ant. Mrav. A little mrav. That means mrav is a Yamuna's language.
Mrav.
Yeah, mrav. Yeah. He doesn't want to hurt even an ant. That is the feeling of a devotee, and I think we all have it. When we see an ant and crossing the road, we just jump and so on. And we become maybe disturbed if someone tells us you are crazy that you try to jump around an ant and not hurt an ant, because we have become a little soft-hearted. It is natural for a vegetarian to all of a sudden develop some feelings of compassion to those creatures who carry meat on their bones, you know, and the ant certainly carries meat on his bones. It is said that there are that there is a nice little example of this, of a soft-hearted devotee. His name was Yada Bharat. Yada Bharat was once sitting and meditating near a field, and he was passed by a king Rahuganath was riding on a palanquin. So there had been an accident in one of the palanquin to one of the palanquin bearers. I believe it was a cobra who had bitten one of the palanquins. So they only had three bearers and not four. That was not easy walking, and it was a problem for the king. So they needed a fourth man, and when they saw this great saint Yada Bharat, they said, "You please come, the king is coming by, we need another palanquin bearer. You have a strong body." Yada Bharat was Brahman realized. He didn't really make a difference between the different material activities or different material states. He said, "All right, I'm sitting here, I can also carry, no difference." It's and he said, "Yes, yes, I will carry." He carried. Then all of a sudden he saw some ants passing the road. And he began to avoid the ants by jumping over the ants. So Rahugana, you know, sitting on top of his palanquin, the king, was shaken, like on a ship. He looked, why was he shaken? He saw this one new palanquin bearer and was very disturbed. He said, "What are you thinking you are doing? This is not carrying a palanquin." And he was almost falling, and he began to actually abuse Yada Bharat. He told him, "You nonsense, carry the palanquin." So see what the soft-hearted Rahugana, what happened to Bharata. It says, "O son of there were some waves of dissatisfaction in the mind of Yada Bharat, because he was insulted by the king Rahugana, who made him carry his palanquin. But Yada Bharat neglected these waves of dissatisfaction, and his heart again became calm and quiet like an ocean." Being a Vaishnava, he was naturally very kind-hearted, and he therefore told the king about the constitutional position of the soul. He then forgot the insult because King Rahugana pitifully begged pardon at his lotus feet. So you can see, even a great soul like Yada Bharat has emotions, because emotions are natural. He didn't feel very nice when the king told him, "You are an idiot." He felt what is called waves of dissatisfaction in his mind. This expression, waves of dissatisfaction, I find extremely nice and telling, because it tells us something about what emotions are, according to Vedic understanding. See, our psyche in the Vedic understanding has been compared to be to be an ocean, very deep. There are some things which we don't see, some things which lie in the darkness, like a real ocean. But on the surface of that ocean are the waves of emotions. And they come and go according to external stimuli, like maybe there is a strong current, maybe there's a boat driving, or maybe a wind or a storm is threatening the peace. As you go through life, in other words, emotions will come and go, and that seems to be natural, even for a great soul who saw how his mind became agitated. Srila Prabhupada once said, even great saints have changing emotions. Our thoughts are always changing. That is the nature of the mind. So you cannot expect that even the great saintly persons are free from thoughts coming and going. It means also emotions coming and going. It's natural, in other words, when a young monk sees a young nun and feels some emotions. It is natural. Even a great saint like Yada Bharata felt changing emotions. It's natural that sometimes a devotee becomes dissatisfied and frustrated and so on. Don't worry. This is spiritual life. Doesn't mean that this in itself will change. It is natural. And some of us, as I said, have a heart like wax. It's easier. Some some changes appear. Just like wax gets easily melted, whereas gold does not get so easily melted. This is Teupurilutni, that is natural. It's very interesting to come to an understanding that that devotees have changing emotions, and I feel it is important for us to deal with this subject, so that you can later, when I go into the intense subjects, I'm at the moment only preparing you as my audience for the some very emotional parts of the lecture. It's very, very, very natural. Do you know what is a Mahabhagavat? Bhagavat is a devotee, and Maha means a super devotee. There are three levels of Mahabhagavats. First, there is a Mahabhagavat who's completely free from any material impression on his mind, because he has reawakened his relationship with Krishna. Such a devotee is totally uninfluenced by the waves of material nature. An example is Narada Muni, but I would like to give the example of Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur was at the Ganga, and he was day in and day out singing and laughing because he was in love. He was in love with Krishna. He would sometimes jump up and say, "Krishna, Krishna," and started to jump, and he really was in love, totally in love with all the symptoms. Sometimes people didn't understand him, and they called him a fool, but he didn't even notice. One time there was, the Muslims, the Muslim government thought him to be a disturbance, and they did a public wiping or whipping. Öffentliche Auspeitschung. Haridas Thakur didn't notice it as painful. He was chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Imagine this. And he only had one worry. He prayed to Krishna, please, these people don't know what they are doing. Please forgive them what they are doing. He was not influenced by the material nature. This is amazing, isn't it, Mario? It is totally amazing. So this is one level of Mahabhagavat. And then there's another level. It's a devotee who's also free from material influences, but who has not yet realized his Swarupa. That means his eternal identity. When you know, I'm not Ishan, so anything which happens to Ishan is not important for me, then you have no problem. If you know I'm not Yamuna, then when someone says something which hurts the human being, you say, nothing to do with it. I know my Swarupa. I am a Manjari. and you don't relate to it any longer. So there is a second type of devotee who is also not influenced, like Shukadev Goswami. You know, Shukadev Goswami was so beyond, so aloof, that he didn't even dress. He went dressed by the wind. Also vom Winde eingekleidet. It's also nice, it's also interesting fashion. Freikörperkultur, we say in Germany. But he was so beyond the beyond the identification with the body, it was not objectionable. In India, you sometimes see these saints who are not dressing, and you know when you see them, it is no problem. You know, they're very nice, cultured people. Then there is a third person. This devotee is slightly tinged by the material modes. The example which is given here is Narada Muni also. Narada Muni, went on a pilgrimage, and at the end of his journey, he had a clear realization of God. He was on the level of Baba, that means tears of love were drenching his face, and he saw the Lord for a moment. Then the Lord disappeared from him and spoke to him. Now then, after the Lord had disappeared from Narada Muni, Narada Muni obviously tried to have the vision of Krishna back in his mind. He prayed and he meditated, but Krishna did not appear to him in form. Krishna appeared only in sound. And he told him, O Narada, I regret that during this lifetime you will not be able to see me anymore. Those who are incomplete in service and who are not completely free from material taints can hardly see me. So Narada Muni had seen Krishna, but obviously there was still some problem with him, some material contamination, therefore, because of this, Krishna did not reveal himself or was not visible to Narada Muni all the time. The question is, what was Narada Muni's problem? And here comes the answer from Jiva Goswami. Narada Muni was attracted to the peace and the beauty of forest life. He thought, oh, it's so peaceful here. Shanti, shanti, shanti. And that means he was a little bit under the influence of Sattvaguna. All these devotees, the one who is, this devotee, Narada Muni, who's under the influence, has emotions coming and going. Do you think you will not have emotions coming and going? Of course you will have. I mean, we are not, we are to more attached to the life in the forest, isn't it, Yamuna? We have our private attachments, which we will not reveal in the morning Bhagavatam class. We will not reveal them to anyone. So it is natural, in other words, you know, I want to this time say, it is natural to be attached. It is natural to have emotions. It's natural to be a little bit moved by our lives and by our circumstances. And tomorrow, I would like to talk about how to deal with such emotions, make friends with our emotions so that they help us in spiritual life. I will talk about useful emotions which are there, which can help us very, very much to be emotionally strong people and which will build up our spirituality. Today I just wanted to talk a little bit on the subject matter of emotions to prepare the ground for tomorrow. So please be with us tomorrow as well. I want to now end my class by seeing if you have any questions regarding the subjects which you have heard about, or any something which interests you in this connection. Please feel encouraged to ask Kalakanta ji.
So just now that Naradami has small still material combination being attached to self-awareness.
Yeah. Yes, he is now the first example of a Mahabhagavat who has realized his spiritual identity. He's Naradi. Naradi is a gopi in Krishna Lila, and there is a place in Kusum Sarova in Vrindavan where the Narada Muni took his bath in Kusum Sarova, and he came out as a little girl. Also, Lord Shiva is there in Krishna Lila as Gopishvara, and he took a bath in Mansarova. That's a very nice place in Vrindavan. So I sometimes think, Kalakanta, if I take enough baths in the holy lakes of Vrindavan, maybe my spiritual identity will also come out. That is my secret method. Yes, and Narada Muni. With this example, I wanted to say that, but he was known as a Mahabhagavat even then, when he liked the forests and so on. Therefore, I wanted to say it's all right for us who are really not like Narada. I mean, at least we don't feel like Narada Muni, so accomplished in spiritual life. It's all right and natural to be a little emotional. Yeah, Herr Goha.
I didn't understand the distinction between the first level, like Haridas Thakur, and the second of Shukadev Goswami.
Shukadev Goswami has not realized his Swarupa.
I thought he's the parrot in Vrindavan.
Shukadev parrot. Yes, but it is not. He's not conscious about it. He's not realized about this. That's the example which is given by Jiva Goswami in I think it's a Bhakti Sandarbhas. The first devotee is totally unmoved by the material nature because he has realized his Swarupa. The second level Mahabhagavat
is a devotee who is also unmoved by the material nature, because he has but he has not yet realized his original spiritual identity. And the third level of Mahabhagavat is the Mahabhagavat who's still affected by the material nature. He is a forest lover, there's still some influence of the material nature. Yeah.
It's a little difficult to ask questions now because the second part is still coming, so I don't know if you will speak about this.
But you are not there for the second part. Why because not? No, aren't you going tomorrow morning? Or?
No. We will not go before we hear the second
part. Oh, yeah. Please.
You were speaking many things. Like giving up one's culture because one knows it's a culture which is not 100% spiritual.
Yeah.
We come from different. Everyone has his background, and we try to accept a very foreign culture for us, which didn't satisfy us, or many times doesn't satisfy us because it's so strange. Mm-hmm. We cannot enter deep. We don't know the language. We don't know the kind of emotions which I had in West Bengal 100 years ago. We cannot appreciate the music, or we play the music with our cards.
Yeah.
With Western style of cards, and we cannot really enter, and therefore we can't satisfy. So, will you speak about this tomorrow? How to solve this very important problem?
We will speak about this, yes, from the Bhagavatam. But it is a compromise solution which we will talk tomorrow about. I will indicate it. It's a very interesting subject matter which I think many of us have talked about. Yes, I will talk about it from the perspective which I have also told to our Premamayi, that our mind sometimes needs to be set free a little bit. Krishna's instruction to Uddhava, where he says, an expert horseman will not all the time pull the reins of the horse, zieht nicht immer die Zügel, but sometimes lets the horse run. And when I talk about this subject, so in the same way, an expert yogi will not always try to control his mind and emotions, but he sometimes lets them run. I will show you tomorrow something which will surprise you, because I have learned a Western instrument. And I will play for all the devotees. I have carefully prepared myself up to this moment where I can talk about this, and I will give a concert here for 5 minutes on my newly acquired Western instrument. Yeah. When I first used it, Gaurahari and myself were taking prasadam, and Gaurahari was starting to laugh so intensely that we were afraid what would happen with the prasadam which had already entered his stomach. So he could not control himself. He could not even sit near to the instrument because it made him so joyful that he had to move one table next to us. He became so extremely joyful. Do you remember? And tomorrow I will play, and Gaurahari will most probably die from laughter. It is a very joyful instrument. So what to do with this culture. I mean, I must tell you very, 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 very candidly. Candidly is this so ein bisschen so, yes, ist jetzt nicht etwas, candid, it's a candid information, also ein bisschen brisant, brisant sagt man in Deutsch. When we went to the Ayurvedic clinic and you played this, you know, almost sounded like extremely emotional. The Chidakara, who was there, took, you know, became like a little boy. He's the director of the Ayurvedic clinic, you know, and he said, he said to me, es ist so schrecklich sentimental, aber es ist so super gut. he told me, you know, he told me. And I remember this one devotee, I will never forget him. He said, I can give up anything except my stones collection, Rolling Stones. I can give up everything, but not my stones collection.
This was not yours.
It was not me, it was another person. Krishna. Yes. So yes, we will talk about this tomorrow. Yes, why do we have this tendency that in the beginning we become almost hard-hearted? It is because we have heard one information which is correct, but have misunderstood it a little bit, so that the correct information has become an incorrect notion for us. The correct thing is, if you want to advance in spiritual life, you do have to move a little bit aside. You cannot maintain your old habits and your old lifestyle. It doesn't work. You have to change. But this does in itself does not mean you have to change emotions. You have to keep emotions. That is the reason. Like I gave you the example, when I became a devotee, I dealt very I thought my old family is really not my family, and I hurted my parents quite a lot in the beginning. Yes, later I understood, well, this is a wrong application of the philosophy. They may not be your eternal family, they may not be your spiritual, they may not be like you may think God is your eternal father, but that doesn't mean that you should hurt your parents. That's a wrong interpretation. You should love everyone, especially the parents, you know, who should be grateful. And I really had to correct this, and I think I tried at least with my very best. I don't know how successful I was. It's something good is taken, something very powerful is taken, but it is misinterpreted and then it becomes something bad. That happens everywhere. Energy is good, but if you misuse it, energy becomes can kill people. Okay, so I want to thank you very much for listening so patiently. I hope that tomorrow I will not disappoint anyone of my audience, because now it gets really interesting. We will actually start tomorrow with very useful emotions in spiritual life. But then we will also come to what we can call the raw emotions, die uneditierten Emotionen. Okay, so I wish you a very nice day in Krishna consciousness. A prayer to the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it says, O giver of saintliness to the unsaintly, O uplifter of the very fallen, please do not ever leave me. My dear Bhagavatam, please lovingly appear in my heart and on my throat. Beautiful, isn't it? Isn't it? I think it's very beautiful. O my only friend, O my companion, O my teacher, O my great wealth, O my deliverer, O my good fortune, O my bliss, I offer my respectful obeisances to you. Prayer to the Bhagavatam. I will put a piece of paper in here so that you... Actually, tomorrow we will hear some other prayers from this book. Actually, I can... 208 kann man sich ja merken. Nicht 108, sondern 208. So, have a very nice day. May the Krishna sun shine in your mind the whole day and night. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.